Welcome, everyone. My goodness, what a beautiful day it has been today, right? I honor that. We don't always have the best of days, but boy, we sure are having them now, and I'm grateful for it. So for those of you who are just joining us for the first time, you are listening to Steele Talkin'. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. It is what I love to do on a Sunday night is be here with you. So thank you so much for sticking and staying with me. My goodness, I've been through so much trying to figure out all the things for tonight, and we have some great guests because of my producers. Of course, Jonathan Lowe has been with me for a long, long time, and I know he doesn't want to talk about that. He might start crying because I drive him nuts sometimes. That's just my take on it. Okay, Jonathan, you're not saying a word, so I know you didn't like that. All right, then
I didn't. I'm just letting it pass, letting it flow. I'm just letting everything just continue to trickle on down the stream of life.
Oh my goodness. You sound like you have been to a therapist and that you are so ready to just live your life through calm and peace and joy.
What I sound like is I've been in a dark place with Aaron Rodgers doing ayahuasca. That's what I sound like.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Tell me more.
Oh, no, it's a joke for... Did you hear about the dark retreat that Aaron Rodgers took this summer? He basically went into a hut or something, didn't have food or water. Well, I think he had food or water like delivered through a slot in the door, but was in a dark retreat for a couple of days, 3 or 4 days, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like, oh, you go into this space and you start tripping out and you start thinking about life and everything, blah, 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 blah. And so, yes, that's what I was equating that to. Yes.
Okay. Got it. Well, first of all, I do hope that you've had a wonderful day today. Have you?
It's been, I've been here most of the day, just getting us through the Twins game and everything. So it's just, it's been a normal Sunday. Nothing too...
It's been abnormal for me today. It's been abnormal for me today, and it's been rushing. And, when that happens, you just kind of stop and go, breathe. You just have to breathe, Geraldine. And then once I breathe, I'm good to go. So it's been one of those days. I will say that I'm really grateful today. There's something that I'm really grateful for. I'm always looking towards mercy and grace. So I'm really grateful that I'm having a really beautiful day. It is so gorgeous outside. And you being a trained meteorologist, do you enjoy the days that look like this?
I do. I'm one of those weirdos that also enjoys if you get an overcast day that's, 70, 75 degrees, I'm fine with that. I know a lot of people, they want to see sunshine as much as possible.
Right.
But a day like today was, I went out yesterday and went out and played 18 holes of golf for the first time this year, and the weather could not have been better. It was not a cloud in the sky. It probably got up to around 72, 73. I got to look at the high temperatures, but it got into the mid-70s, I want to believe, and it was just absolutely a gorgeous day. My golf
Perfect.
Game, not so much, but the day was fantastic, and today was very similar to that.
I have to say my brother Fred Steele, as you well know, loves golf and he goes to play anytime he can and he's good. He is good at it. I'm really proud of him. And I have to admit, I look at his wife and I go, I wonder, hey, Luana, are you ever going to, go golfing with Fred? And she was like, I thought about it, but no. So I'm the same way. I'm never going to play golf, but I love to watch it on television. So those of you that really love the game, and I believe that you really love the game, you told me about your involvement in golf many years ago, and you always enjoyed it. Are you still at that point?
I still enjoy getting out there, and I try to make it a necessity to get out this weekend because we have had our spring truncated. It's been shortened. We haven't had the opportunity. Now, some people have gone out and played. I know coworkers that are in a league that they've gone out and played a couple times already through the cooler weather, but they had one of their league days canceled because it was cold and rainy, and they didn't want everybody out in those conditions. And so the spring season that we would normally hopefully get starting in early April, it's been cut short. And so you got to get out there and enjoy it while you can, because we're not certain how long it's going to last.
I think I told you last week that I went over to Ridgedale Mall a couple of days ago, and it was at that top area, you know, where the Macy's is on the top level, and there are two gigantic snow mounds just sitting there, and they're all covered in black. Both of them are covered in black. You can see the white snow, but you can really see the black, and then nothing was melting, nothing, and it was a beautiful day. I didn't have a jacket on. I didn't have a sweater on. It was a beautiful day, but that snow did not melt during that time while I was sitting there in my car going, I have to watch this. Surely it's going to start melting. And it didn't. That was shocking to me. Is that something that has never happened? Or it's you know, people see it all the time and it's no big deal?
It's the latter, because, yes, when you have temperatures as high above freezing as they are, you expect to see, oh, my goodness, this thing should be melting. It's like you're thinking of something at room temperature, and room temperature, you know, like an ice cube at room temperature, and an ice cube at room temperature, it should be dissolved in maybe an hour or two or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a different kind of situation with that. And again, when you have a lot of snow and snow gets to compact, it becomes a little bit denser. So yes, I would think it probably would have been taken out by now, not just with the warmer temperatures, but with the rainfall that has come through. But sometimes it does take a little while for that last snowfall to melt, even though you have temperatures in the 60s or 70s. It's all about the amount of time the temperature has been up there, the amount of sunlight that you get, the amount of radiation that sticks around that will change or help that situation.
Well, I moved here to Minnesota in 1978, and that year, you know, I got here in August, and I thought, oh, wow, you know, what kind of place is this? It just seemed so weird to me. And by May of the next year, I still saw snow under the bridges and that sort of thing. And I started asking anyone I could find, like where I worked, I would go and talk to my coworkers and say, somebody want to explain to me why there's still snow in May? And they said, oh, yeah, that's just the way it is. Like, who are you? And I thought I had really arrived in the wrong place.
I can't disagree with you there.
Yeah. Did you ever feel that way?
I've felt that way, not because it seems, maybe because a little bit it seems strange, but more because I know that this area is going to have that possibility. Once you get north of I-80, a lot of times, you know, that, and that's a stretch that goes through Des Moines and through through Omaha, and, you know, just a little bit south there. I think anytime you get north of I-80, you know, the chances for that increase, and possibly exponentially. So,
yeah, thanks for sharing that, Chief.
I'm just saying.
All day, all evening. Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. Hey, by the way, I know you've been watching all of the games. And are you – my brothers, I don't seem to be surprised that, you know, the Lakers had made some mistakes along the way, some deep ones. What did you think?
So the Lakers had been a flawed team all year. They started out – their roster was constructed in a bad way. And
was it – really?
Yeah. Yes, it was not – a roster that was helpful towards success later on, the players that they had. So they made trades. They got people that fit their roles better, and the team improved. And so they got to the 7 seed, and if they would have had the team that they ended up with at the trade deadline all season, they might have been a 4 or a 3 seed. They might have been a higher seed in the Western Conference. And so now they're coming up against a team in Denver where the first two teams that they faced, they had flaws. They didn't have big guys inside that could match Anthony Davis, who's the star center for the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
Denver does. And Denver's guy that really can match up well with Anthony Davis,
the
dude
guy,
is absurdly amazing.
Yes, he really is. What is his name, though?
Nikola Jokic.
Bruce, but, oh, yeah, him. It's really quite remarkable. I would sit there and go, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? So
now keep
yeah,
in mind,
watching by myself.
Keep in mind, Nikola Jokic is a two-time MVP. The last two seasons, he's won the Most Valuable Player Award. So it's not like he's coming in and everybody should be shocked. He's an MVP. So he should be playing this well in the playoffs. The problem that Denver has had the last two or three years when they've had the roster, the main pieces to the roster that they've had, they haven't all been healthy. Jokic has been healthy, but Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr., respectively, those two players have not been at full strength and full health at the same time. Now they are. And with those three players healthy, that gives you a very, very fortified nucleus of a team that can you can fill around, you can fill pieces and other parts around. So this is the team that we could have seen the last couple of years if they'd been healthy. They're healthy and they're showing it.
Well, we're going to have to take a break, and when we come back, we have about, what, maybe 5 minutes, and I just want to talk a little bit about the new mermaid, which, of course, Disney did, and it was a beautiful mermaid, and she was white, and now they have one that they're redoing, and she's black, and I want to talk to you about that, Jonathan, and anyone else that would like to join us at 651-461-9226. What do you think? We'll be back. Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Steele Talkin'. I'm your host, Geralyn Steele. It's what I love to do is be here with you. And of course, we are talking about in these next few minutes about the new movie, The Little Mermaid, or I should say the new cast of The New Mermaid. Of course, they like Disney loves to do this sort of thing where they turn it around and maybe add different people to it. And of course, initially with the animated one, the mermaid was white. The one she fell in love with was white, and just about everyone in that piece was white, and that's just fine. However, they decided to do one with people of color, and I was very surprised at that. So the one playing Ursula is Melissa McCarthy. The one who's playing Ariel, the main character, is Halle Bailey. Now, Halle Bailey has been working with Beyonce for a long time. You know this, right, Jonathan?
I did. I know Halle Bailey from her work on the TV show Grown-ish.
Oh.
Yes, her and her sister were both.
Yeah, her sister. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, both on the show Grown-ish, and I've watched that over the last few years.
Well,
I've caught up
great,
with it. But.
They're very talented sisters.
They are.
I mean,
yes, they are.
Their voices are absolutely amazing.
Absolutely.
Right. And here it is, this whole, you know, this beautiful list of faces, of ethnic faces. And you just kind of sit here and go, OK, Melissa McCarthy for Ursula, Halle for Ariel, Jonathan Howard King as Eric, Simone Ashley as Indira, Jacob Tremblay for Flounder, David Diggs for Sebastian, and it goes on and on and on. And I was so excited to see this, yet not everyone has fallen in love with this particular piece. But if you would like to tell me why you think it's important that we also take these incredible movies and make sure that people of color, no matter where they're from, no matter what they look like, should also be able to look and see a reflection of themselves in a movie like that, I'd love to hear from you. All you have to do is either text us or call in at 651-461-9226. All right, Jonathan, so when this all happened, and we know that Disney does this from time to time, were you all for it or you just didn't care?
I'm not going to say I didn't care necessarily. I thought, oh, that's cool. Because, again, things change over time. And there are Disney movies that are out there that some people say you have to keep these around. These are classics. These are designed a certain way and designed, you know, with a lot of there's a lot of heartstrings. There's a lot of people that love these movies because of what it represented at the time. But again, you have to say the words at the time. They were made at a certain time. And so if Disney wants to provide a different spin on it, and again, this isn't someone else doing this. This is Disney doing this. If they want to do that, more power to them.
I love it. I love that they do that, because when you look into the eyes of these young girls who really love Ariel, right? They love the songs. They love the everything. They just love it. And no matter what color she is, if they can see a reflection of themselves in that piece, that matters. It changes everything. It really does. And so I look at my granddaughters. One is 10, one is 5, and I look at them. They love it, and they want the doll. I saw last week on one of the talk shows, I think it was Gayle King or one of those. Anyway, they had children that were given this brand new doll that is Ariel, and she's a doll of color. They just lit up. Some of them just kept hugging them and kissing them, and that is powerful. And I hope people see it from that perspective. Allow our children, no matter what color they are, allow them to also see a reflection of themselves. That's a beautiful thing to me. And I know we have to take a break. We got to come back in a moment. And of course, my first guest is at 7:35. It's Gia Vang. She's the co-founder of Very Asian Foundation. We'll be back. It is now 7:34, almost 7:35, and I'm so excited because today we are talking about this month. In fact, we are talking about celebrating the heritage of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. Now, this isn't all about fun and joy. However, as hatred towards and hate crimes against people of Asian descent has grown in recent years. Now, in the wake of one particularly head-shaking incident that happened to St. Louis TV news anchor Michelle Lee, the Very Asian Foundation was born. A co-founder of the group is former Care 11 morning anchor Gia Vang. Ms. Vang joins us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline to explain the group and their efforts to educate others about people originating from this part of the world. And what's quite remarkable to me is that even though we know that this is happening, so many are fighting, trying to make sure that we come together to work together to make sure that this stops, that it will cease. And there's still so much going on behind the scenes, behind people that we don't know, and we don't find a way. Someone said to me, how do you find a way to do something to help the Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders? How do you do that? I don't know, but I know I can find it if I look for it. So we are so excited to have her join us tonight. She is the co-founder of the group, and we are so excited to have Gia Vang join us. Hello, Gia. How are you?
Hi. I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
I tell you, it is an important time right now. How does it feel to know that we are celebrating the heritage of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders today? Because it hasn't always been like this, but today we know that we can go forward helping each other. Do you believe that?
I do. I'm really heartened by the work that has happened in the last couple of years. I think that this month has really just highlighted what we as Asian American folks, NHPI folks, have known for our entire lives. So when people say, oh, how are you celebrating this month? I always tell them, you know, I celebrate all the time because I can't be in any other body besides this.
Right.
So I celebrate all the time. But just this month, knowing that people are recognizing, knowing that we're finally part of the conversations. I was on a panel recently and there were other people who said, oh, we got to talk about Asian Americans. And I'd never, in the 15 years of doing the work that I do, had heard other people that it wasn't specific to Asian Americans talk about how important it was to talk about our communities. So I'm really heartened by this work.
Well, what's amazing is that during your time here in Minneapolis, you covered several national stories, including the Derek Chauvin trial, the Kim Porter trial, and Suni Lee's historic Olympic Games. Great. But at the same time, we all know that no matter where you land when it comes to our friends in the news, we know that something could happen. We know that we could be just a few steps away from something horrible happening. How do you deal with that every morning and when you go to sleep at night?
Yeah, I mean, that's really a reality that we live in, right? I mean, we have many friends who have to have conversations with their children about what it is like to interact with police officers. And so we do know that it's a really difficult thing because you can't really separate yourself from those kinds of interactions.
Right.
But what we can do is we can work toward normalizing ourselves in spaces that people may not be familiar. And that's why, you know, part of the work that The Very Asian does is highlighting things like the May Book Project, which is an effort to get books with people who are AANHPI into schools so children can see and they can understand that, oh, if there's a protagonist, a character that looks like me or that looks like someone else, that it's normal. Because for me growing up, and I don't know about you, but I didn't see myself in books growing up. You know, I was reading things like Mark Twain. And so for me to now be able to put these books in the hands of these children, and we've done like 20,000 books across America in the year that we've done the May Book Project. And so it's been really just, you know, that's the kind of work that we need to do. And, you know, Michelle, my co-founder, and I always talk about the thing that we have to make sure people understand is that the Asian American experience isn't just bicoastal. It's not just what's happening in San Francisco and Seattle or in New York. It's all the large swath in the middle of America, as you know, living in Minnesota. There are Asian people there, and they have a different story to tell. And so making sure that we get into those schools, too, and those sort of programs in those markets, because when they see someone, they don't then use the stereotypes that they have of Asian Americans and say, okay, I know this about Asian Americans. Instead, they can read books and say, oh, I know actually Asian Americans are this way because I read a book about it. And so those are some of the things that I think helps me keep going.
It helps all of us keep going. I really believe that. At the same time, however, the books are really important. We know that books matter to children and adults, right? However, we are having challenges with so many people in our government who are trying to tear down those same things you worked so hard for to make sure that the books are not in the hands of those children. And I'm wondering how you deal with that. How do you make sure that the books keep going, that you are supporting those children, but when you've got so many others trying to take books away?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we do know that that's happening. That is definitely an effort that's going on right now. I think that what Michelle and I try to do is be very careful about what we how we approach this. All that we're doing is putting books in the hands of children who can see themselves reflected in these books. And we talk about, you know, books being mirrors and windows. So if they can see themselves reflected, then they can see beyond, right? And also, it's not just about Asian American students. It's about students who aren't Asian American either. It's about students who don't look like that and say, oh, but this is normal to have this around. And so, you know, I think we honestly just keep fighting the good fight, because we're a small organization that's not going to take on this huge, huge effort to fight book bans. But we're doing what we can. And I think that's, at the end of the day, really what matters is the tangible change that we can see in classrooms and schools that we go to, and seeing and hearing the discussions that are being had among these students.
Are you and Michelle also sensing that there are others who don't look like you, but they are fighting for you? Do you feel that?
I definitely do. I mean, there are so many other communities out there, right? You know, about like the Black community or the Latinx community. There are other communities who understand that working across racial race barriers are important. So collaborating with other groups are going to be what liberates us. So I definitely see that there's efforts on all sides, especially when it comes to marginalized communities. And even when we talk about those communities, we're talking about LGBTQ communities as well.
As we keep watching and learning about so many that are hurting today, right, whether it's over books or people that are spitting on them and don't want them around, here we are trying to do better. We're trying to bring all of us together. I feel the same way. At the same time, if the children are receiving the books, are the teachers also promoting the right books? Or are they saying, well, I'll give you this book, but I won't give you that book? Because in some of the Black schools and some of the schools where Black children go, that has been a challenge.
Yeah, I definitely understand that. And, you know, what we do is we actually, because this list that we have as a part of the May Book Project is a vetted list, and we're talking about people who put it together, our scholars, their educators, their librarians, and also students. I mean, this started all because of students. And so we feel very fortunate that we have such a robust list. And also what comes with that, because of the people who were involved in creating this, they've also created rubrics for teachers too. If teachers don't know how to teach this or how to go about talking about some of the themes that are going on in these books, we have created rubrics for teachers to allow them to do that. But it is a challenge. I mean, it's a challenge right now to when you talk about personal preference and what you want to teach. But it, at least in the districts that we can still reach, we are we're happy to do it, and we're happy to provide support.
It feels as though every one of us that is different, you know, whether we look different, sound different, talk different, it's maddening how some just do not want to understand who we are. So I keep saying to myself, what is it that I need to do to make sure that I fill up? Because I'm going to pour myself out every day, and I'm asking you this same question. What do you do, or where do you go to fill up once you have poured out for the day?
I mean, that's a really hard question when we talk about self-care. I have a really hard time with it because I think I'm always exhausted. I do feel like there is a sense of urgency in the work that we do. As a person of color, as a person who lives in this body, I need to make sure that my 15 nieces and nephews and my great niece do not grow up in a world where they feel ashamed, where they have to hide bits of themselves or try to hide, even though they can't because they physically look like that. And I just want them to grow up in a world where they don't have to do that, because I did. And so it is exhausting work, but I think I do cherish the moments that are really, really powerful and beautiful. For example, when we went to Minnesota and we had our book drops in St. Paul back in March, there were groups of students there who put the books up to their face and said, oh my gosh, you look like her. And I'm not just talking about, and her friends were all, you know, of different backgrounds and ethnicities. And I just, that to me, I hold those and cherish those moments because I need to, in order to keep seeing the marathon that we're running here.
Wow, that's powerful. That is very powerful. As you keep moving forward, what is the next step for the foundation?
Well, we have so many wonderful collaborations and events coming up. We just want to continue doing what we're doing, which is to shine a light on Asian experiences, and that's through advocacy and celebration, right? And so when we celebrate ourselves, we have to be joyful in ourselves, we have to be joyful in who we are, and know that joy doesn't come from the things that society tells us joy comes from, that it comes from things like making your food that, you know, your mom made when you were younger. That's joyful. And then also through advocacy, so things like the May Book Project. And then, you know, we have another project also, which is the Creators Project.
It is now 7:34, almost 7:35, and I'm so excited because today we are talking about this month. In fact, we are talking about celebrating the heritage of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. Now, this isn't all about fun and joy. However, as hatred towards and hate crimes against people of Asian descent has grown in recent years. Now, in the wake of one particularly head-shaking incident that happened to St. Louis TV news anchor Michelle Lee, the Very Asian Foundation was born. A co-founder of the group is former CARE 11 morning anchor Gia Vang. Ms. Vang joins us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline to explain the group and their efforts to educate others about people originating from this part of the world. And what's quite remarkable to me is that even though we know that this is happening, so many are fighting, trying to make sure that we come together to work together to make sure that this stops, that it will cease. And there's still so much going on behind the scenes, behind people that we don't know, and we don't find a way. Someone said to me, how do you find a way to do something to help the Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders? How do you do that? I don't know, but I know I can find it if I look for it. So we are so excited to have her join us tonight. She is the co-founder of the group, and we are so excited to have Gia Vang join us. Hello, Gia. How are you?
Hi. I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
I tell you, it is an important time right now. How does it feel to know that we are celebrating the heritage of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders today? Because it hasn't always been like this, but today we know that we can go forward helping each other. Do you believe that?
I do. I'm really heartened by the work that has happened in the last couple of years. I think that this month has really just highlighted what we as Asian American folks, NHPI folks, have known for our entire lives. So when people say, oh, how are you celebrating this month? I always tell them, you know, I celebrate all the time because I can't be in any other body besides this. Right. So I celebrate all the time. But just this month, knowing that people are recognizing, knowing that we're finally part of the conversations. You know, I was on a panel recently and there were other people who said, oh, we got to talk about Asian Americans. And I'd never in the 15 years of doing the work that I do had heard other people that it wasn't specific to Asian Americans talk about how important it was to talk about our communities. So I'm really heartened by this work.
Well, what's amazing is that during your time here in Minneapolis, you covered several national stories, including the Derek Chauvin trial, the Kim Porter trial, and SUNY Lee's historic Olympic Games. Great. But at the same time, we all know that no matter where you land when it comes to our friends in the news, we know that something could happen. We know that we could be just a few steps away from something horrible happening. How do you deal with that every morning and when you go to sleep at night?
Yeah, I mean, that's really a reality that we live in, right? I mean, we have many friends who have to have conversations with their children about what it is like to interact with police officers. And so we do know that it's a really difficult thing because you can't really separate yourself from those kinds of interactions. Right. But what we can do is we can work toward normalizing ourselves in spaces that people may not be familiar. And that's why, you know, part of the work that Very Asian does is highlighting things like the May Book Project, which is an effort to get books with people who are AANHPI into schools so children can see and they can understand that, oh, if there's a protagonist, a character that looks like me or that looks like someone else, that it's normal. Because for me growing up, and I don't know about you, but I didn't see myself in books growing up. You know, I was reading things like Mark Twain. And so for me to now be able to put these books in the hands of these children, and we've done like 20,000 books across America in the year that we've done the May Book Project. And so it's been really just, you know, that's the kind of work that we need to do. And, you know, Michelle, my co-founder, and I always talk about the thing that we have to make sure people understand is that the Asian American experience isn't just bicoastal. It's not just what's happening in San Francisco and Seattle or in New York. It's all the large swath in the middle of America, as you know, living in Minnesota, there are Asian people there and they have a different story to tell. And so making sure that we get into those schools too and those sort of programs in those markets, because when they see someone, they don't then use the stereotypes that they have of Asian Americans and say, okay, I know this about Asian Americans. Instead, they can read books and say, oh, I know actually Asian Americans are this way because I read a book about it. And so those are some of the things that I think helps me keep going.
It helps all of us keep going. I really believe that. At the same time, however, the books are really important. We know that books matter to children and adults, right? However, we are having challenges with so many people in our government who are trying to tear down those same things you worked so hard for to make sure that the books are not in the hands of those children. And I'm wondering how you deal with that. How do you make sure that the books keep going, that you are supporting those children, but when you've got so many others trying to take books away?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we do know that that's happening. That is definitely an effort that's going on right now. I think that what Michelle and I try to do is be very careful about what we how we approach this. All that we're doing is putting books in the hands of children who can see themselves reflected in these books. And we talk about, you know, books being mirrors and windows. So if they can see themselves reflected, then they can see beyond, right? And also, it's not just about Asian American students. It's about students who aren't Asian American either. It's about students who don't look like that and say, oh, but this is normal to have this around. And so, you know, I think we honestly just keep fighting the good fight, because we're a small organization that's not going to take on this huge, huge effort to fight book bans. But we're doing what we can. And I think that's, at the end of the day, really what matters is the tangible change that we can see in classrooms and schools that we go to, and seeing and hearing the discussions that are being had among these students.
Are you and Michelle also sensing that there are others who don't look like you, but they are fighting for you? Do you feel that?
I definitely do. I mean, there are so many other communities out there, right? You know, about like the Black community or the Latinx community. There are other communities who understand that working across racial race barriers are important. So collaborating with other groups are going to be what liberates us. So I definitely see that there's efforts on all sides, especially when it comes to marginalized communities. And even when we talk about those communities, we're talking about LGBTQ communities as well.
As we keep watching and learning about so many that are hurting today, right, whether it's over books or people that are spitting on them and don't want them around, here we are trying to do better. We're trying to bring all of us together. I feel the same way. At the same time, if the children are receiving the books, are the teachers also promoting the right books, or are they saying, well, I'll give you this book, but I won't give you that book? Because in some of the Black schools and some of the schools where Black children go, that has been a challenge.
Yeah, I definitely understand that. And, you know, what we do is we actually, because this list that we have as a part of the May Book Project is a vetted list, and we're talking about people who put it together, our scholars, their educators, their librarians, and also students. I mean, this started all because of students. And so we feel very fortunate that we have such a robust list. And also what comes with that, because of the people who were involved in creating this, they've also created rubrics for teachers too. If teachers don't know how to teach this or how to go about talking about some of the themes that are going on in these books, we have created rubrics for teachers to allow them to do that. But it is a challenge. I mean, it's a challenge right now to when you talk about personal preference and what you want to teach. But it, at least in the districts that we can still reach, we're happy to do it, and we're happy to provide support.
It feels as though every one of us that is different, you know, whether we look different, sound different, talk different, it's maddening how some just do not want to understand who we are. So I keep saying to myself, what is it that I need to do to make sure that I fill up? Because I'm going to pour myself out every day, and I'm asking you this same question. What do you do, or where do you go to fill up once you have poured out for the day?
I mean, that's a really hard question when we talk about self-care. I have a really hard time with it because I think I'm always exhausted. I do feel like there is a sense of urgency in the work that we do. As a person of color, as a person who lives in this body, I need to make sure that my 15 nieces and nephews and my great niece do not grow up in a world where they feel ashamed, where they have to hide bits of themselves or try to hide, even though they can't because they physically look like that. And I just want them to grow up in a world where they don't have to do that, because I did. And so it is exhausting work, but I think I do cherish the moments that are really, really powerful and beautiful. For example, when we went to Minnesota and we had our book drops in St. Paul back in March, there were groups of students there who put the books up to their face and said, oh my gosh, you look like her. And I'm not just talking about, and her friends were all, you know, of different backgrounds and ethnicities. And I just, that to me, I hold those and cherish those moments because I need to, in order to keep seeing the marathon that we're running here.
Wow, that's powerful. That is very powerful. As you keep moving forward, what is the next step for the foundation?
Well, we have so many wonderful collaborations and events coming up. We just want to continue doing what we're doing, which is to shine a light on Asian experiences. And that's through advocacy and celebration, right? And so when we celebrate ourselves, we have to be joyful in ourselves, we have to be joyful in who we are, and know that joy doesn't come from the things that society tells us joy comes from, that it comes from things like making your food that, you know, your mom made when you were younger. That's joyful. And then also through advocacy, so things like the May Book Project. And then, you know, we have another project also, which is the Creators Project, which, you know, Asian American creators were they kind of popped up during the pandemic, and a lot of people pivoted their careers because they prioritized their lives. And so we want to make sure that in all the spaces that we inhabit, that we're coming to the table as our full selves. And I think that's, you know, the work that still continues. And then I'm super excited also, I just want to plug Bauhaus Breweries in Minnesota and Arbiter Brewing, because we have a collab coming up with them. So, not, you know, just because I'm not living in Minnesota anymore doesn't mean that we don't still do work with the really wonderful companies there. And so both those breweries, we're working together on a rice lager, and it's going to have a release party on June 9th. And so that's also another way of kind of making sure that people see us in these spaces that traditionally aren't thought of as like Asian American spaces. Arbiter Brewing in South Minneapolis is one of very, very little Asian owned breweries. Only 2% of breweries in this country are Asian owned, and Arbiter Brewing is one of them. And for them to work with us and work with Bauhaus on this rice lager, we're just super excited about things like that, because then you can go into the spaces and be like, wait, I never thought about Asian people in brewing, but now you do. So
now you do.
So, yeah. Yeah.
All it takes is one. That's the amazing thing. You know, it takes just one person to step forward for others to say, oh, I can do that too. So that's amazing to me. My goodness, it's been wonderful to talk with you. And my last question for you is all about making sure that the Asian American community is comfortable wherever they are here in the great state of Minnesota. Can you say that that's where it's leading? You feel as though Minnesota is still welcoming you, welcoming so many Asian Americans, or do you feel like there's something else we need to do to make it better?
Well, I want to say that I love the Asian American community in Minnesota. We are such a small but mighty group, and we get things done, and I just really, really miss their spirits. I do think that there's still so much work ahead, though. I mean, we're never to the point where it's okay. Where we are currently. I mean, I know that when I left my TV station there, people were reaching out to me and they said, you know, we're just not doing the same kinds of stories that you were doing when you were here. And so I think that there's an opening and an appetite and a desire, because the demographics of Minnesota are changing, and things like media need to also represent that, and the stories need to represent that. And so there's still a long ways to go, and that comes down to, you know, management and station vision and what they're doing in terms of hiring. You know, Michelle and I have this kind of joke, but we believe it's true as journalists. She says, you know, if Joe Schmo in Springfield, Illinois, sees an Asian person on TV, he's less likely to make those stereotypes about Asian people, because, oh, look, it's just, yeah, Michelle and Gia, and she's my morning anchor, or she's, you know, it's less likely to happen that they will take those stereotypes that they believe. And so, you know, as someone in TV news, I've gotten that so many times too as an Asian person, where someone said, I've never seen an Asian anchor before. And then 6 months down the line, they email me back and say, oh, you're just like the other anchors, you know? It's almost like, well, yeah, duh. Right?
And well, so, I must say, go ahead.
Yeah. I think just continuing to make sure that people are represented in all aspects of the, you know, hierarchy of work.
Well, Gia Vang, thank you so much for joining us, co-founder of Very Asian Foundation. We appreciate it, and I hope I can speak with you again. Take care.
Thank you so much.
All right. Good night. We'll be back in a moment. It is now 7:54 here at WCCO. Welcome back. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Steele Talkin', and I'm your host, Geralyn Steele, and it is what I love to do, is be here with you on a Sunday night, and that is the truth. I must say that we were talking earlier about Disney and constantly changing the original movies, the characters, the animated characters were all people that were white, or animals that were white, really. Seriously, it's a little strange. However, we know also that Disney has really worked very hard over a few decades, showing that, yes, we should have all Americans, as many as possible, involved. Well, we asked the question about whether or not it's the right thing to do, where all of a sudden the mermaid movie, who was white at first, and then all of a sudden it has the Haley in it now, who is African-American, and it's beautiful. I'm wondering how you feel about that. The phone lines are open at 651-461-9226. Now, we have a caller on the phone. His name is Donnie, and he's in South St. Paul. Hey, Donnie.
Oh, John Steele, love your program, your voice, and your singing. So, just sing more.
Thank you. Okay, hey, Donnie, you got a deal.
Well, listen, my eldest daughter had Down syndrome, and her favorite character was Belle in Little Mermaid.
Oh.
She had Down syndrome. She would have loved that. But the reason I'm calling is I went to see Hamlet last week, Geraldine, and just referring to your last speaker, she talked about the Asian woman. She talked about the marathon we're running, and it is a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
The protagonist in the Guthrie version of Hamlet was Afro-American. He was fabulous. Now, Gertrude's mother was Afro-American. She was not a strong character. His father was white, Claudius, the murdering king. He was white. He wasn't very good, but it doesn't matter. But, you know, to be honest with you, I hate to talk about color. You know, Dr. King said he hoped to live in a world where people are judged by the content of their character, not by the color of their skin.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we're there yet, but I just want to tell you my favorite cartoon. You're too young, but I'm 70. I grew up in an all-black neighborhood in Rondo area. I actually ended up teaching there for quite a while. But anyways, here's my favorite cartoon. Do you remember the Washington Post cartoonist Oliphant?
No.
Well, here's my
tell
favorite
cartoon. Tell me more. We've got a few seconds. Keep going.
Well, it's beautiful. There's two fathers walking their babies in buggies. They're walking toward each other. And the white guy goes, black dude. The black dude, white guy. But the two children in the buggy, they're both saying, ah, cool, another kid.
How about that, Donnie? Thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate it. All right, everyone, coming up next is Dr. Daniel Kirsch. You don't want to miss that conversation talking about stress. Oh, man, I've had some of that recently. We'll be back. It is now 7:54 here at WCCO. Welcome back. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Steele Talking, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele, and it is what I love to do is be here with you on a Sunday night, and that is the truth. I must say that we were talking earlier about Disney and constantly changing the original movies, the animated characters were all people that were white or animals that were white, really. Seriously, it's a little strange. However, we know also that Disney has really worked very hard over a few decades, showing that, yes, we should have all Americans, as many as possible, involved. Well, we asked the question about whether or not it's the right thing to do, where all of a sudden the mermaid movie, who was white at first, and then all of a sudden it has the Haley in it now, who is African-American, and it's beautiful. I'm wondering how you feel about that. The phone lines are open at 651-461-9226. Now, we have a caller on the phone. His name is Donnie, and he's in South St. Paul. Hey, Donnie.
Oh, John Steele, love your program, your voice, and your singing. So, just sing more.
Thank you. Okay,
hey,
Donnie, you got a deal.
Well, listen, my eldest daughter had Down syndrome, and her favorite character was Belle in Little Mermaid.
Oh.
She had Down syndrome. She would have loved that. But the reason I'm calling is I went to see Hamlet last week, Geraldine, and just referring to your last speaker, she talked about the Asian woman. She talked about the marathon we're running, and it is a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
The protagonist in the Guthrie version of Hamlet was Afro-American. He was fabulous. Now, Gertrude's mother was Afro-American. She was not a strong character. His father was white, Claudius, the murdering king. He was white. He wasn't very good, but it doesn't matter. But, you know, to be honest with you, I hate to talk about color. You know, Dr. King said he hoped to live in a world where people are judged by the content of their character, not by the color of their skin.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we're there yet, but I just want to tell you my favorite cartoon. You're too young, but I'm 70. I grew up in an all-black neighborhood in Rondo area. I actually ended up teaching there for quite a while. But anyways, here's my favorite cartoon. Do you remember the Washington Post cartoonist Oliphant?
No.
Well, here's my
tell me more. We've got a few seconds. Keep going.
Well, it's beautiful. There's two fathers walking their babies in buggies. They're walking toward each other, and the white guy goes, "Black dude," the black dude, goes, "White guy," but the two children in the buggy, they're both saying, "Ah, cool, another kid."
How about that, Donnie? Thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate it. All right, everyone, coming up next is Dr. Daniel Kirsch. You don't want to miss that conversation talking about stress. Oh, man, I've had some of that recently. We'll be back.